Natural Resources to order. I'm going to reverse the order of the two bills because one is, as Senator Beyer can tell you, one is much more complicated than the other. So we'll take the lesser complicated of the two and deal with it first, which means that we're doing House Bill 2546. I'm going to ask Judith to update us on it. We have somebody from DEQ here that can answer questions. And Judith?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House Bill 2546 is the measure that we did hear once already. It would delete the requirement that government fleet vehicles annually certify compliance with pollution control equipment requirements. Basically, that would take them from an annual to a biennial certification requirement. We have received a no revenue impact, and at the last meeting you did receive the fiscal showing a savings in the first biennium of approximately $8,600 for the Department of Administrative Services and $8,300 in the biennium in savings for the Oregon Department of Transportation. And you do have at your seat, well, certainly let me remind you that this did come to us from the House with a 54-2 vote. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Let me be clear that I'm gaveling us into a work session on this because we have the answers to the questions that we asked the other day. I can suggest them, or somebody from DEQ can come up and respond to the questions. Senator Beyer, would you prefer that?
Mr. Chair, I was informed by the City of Portland yesterday that, in fact, all fleets over 50 vehicles, I think it was, that are exempt from, or they can do their own testing.
Right. They can do their own testing.
And as long as that's, DEQ confirms that, and that's, I'm fine with the bill.
Okay.
And they're shaking their head yes. So,
the fact is that in rule, DEQ could change the rules for the private fleets from the annual to the biannual kind of inspection. But then they bumped into this, that government vehicles they couldn't do by rule. So what they were already doing, planning to do by for the private fleets, they couldn't do without this change for the governmental one. And it does, as you see, change everything.
Chair, you want a motion?
Sure.
I move House Bill 2546 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer moves Senate Bill 2546 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any House Bill 2546 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? If not, would the clerk call the roll?
Senator Corcoran? Senator Fisher?
Aye.
Vice Chair Beyer?
Aye.
Chair Shields?
Aye. House Bill 2546 is sent to the floor. Is there anybody that wants to carry this bill? I can carry it myself.
Care.
I'll carry it.
I don't care.
Senator Beyer.
Go ahead.
Okay, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2546 and open a work session on Senate Bill 95, a bill that I do not think will move quite as quickly.
You have a work session or a public hearing also?
Well, I guess we could call it a public hearing and work session. So we'll call it a public hearing and a work session.
You can only open one at a time.
Okay. So we'll start with a public hearing. Sorry, I'm still learning this stuff.
And yes, in rules they open simultaneously.
All right. Judith, do you want to update us a little bit?
Certainly.
I got a list, as Judith is getting ready, I got a verbal list of everybody that's here on this bill this morning, and then the wondrous words, nobody's in agreement, so we should have fun with this.
Mr. Chair, members, Senate Bill 95... is the measure that exempts reusable syringes used in animal husbandry from the infectious waste disposal requirements. by specifically excluding them from the definition of sharps. You have received the Dash 1 amendments. Those amendments specify that sharps specifically do not include a syringe used by a farmer or rancher for the purposes of animal husbandry if the needle has been removed from the syringe and the remaining portions have been destroyed. We have received a no fiscal and no revenue impact statement on both the original measure and the Dash 1 amendments. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Byer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to point out for the record in a letter that Judith gave me from the DEQ that listed other states and how they do this, I guess I would just like to put on the record that Washington State infectious waste regulations are county, not state responsibility. There are no state regulations addressing how farmers and ranchers handle waste syringes. That's our neighbor to the north, California. A farmer who uses syringes in the care of his own livestock is exempt from the California Medical Waste Management Act, our neighbor to the south, one of our neighbors to the south. Idaho, sharps generated on farms and not ranches are not regulated by the state, our neighbor to the east. Our other neighbor to the south, Nevada, syringes from farms and ranches fall under a general regulatory exemption from solid waste generated by agriculture. So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would like to point out that what this amendment does would put us exactly equivalent to all of our neighboring states. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Byer. And if that's where we want to get, I hope people will address potentially how this gets us there or doesn't get us there or whatever. Is that okay? With that, I'd like to...
Nora Schlesky.
Nora. I'm going to go with Nora, and you come up with the last name for me. Let her say a few words. We're glad you're back. You're not at all sheepish about being here this morning, I can see.
Yeah, but I'm worried about being here. I have two of them about ready to pop, and I said I could give myself 2 hours, and I best get back to the barn. Thank you. My name is Nora Schlesky. I live at 5782 Village View Court in Almsville, Oregon, and run a sheep farm, Unique Suffolk. I hope I didn't cheat by putting down that I was for this amendment. I didn't know quite what to do. This amendment does not make sense to me because it doesn't really say how to dispose. I mean, should I burn it? What? The amendment that we have here. And I want to start off by saying thanks for not being sick of me. I thought this was going to be an easy thing because I kind of tend to look at things in right and wrong, and I don't cheat. And so to me, this was not harmful. And I just thought, why am I having to pay this when I'm not going to harm anyone? The two concerns that I heard last time when we met here and when we met again on a conference call were, number one, you can't tell an animal syringe from a human syringe, and number two, the concern raised by the doctor at the department, and I'm sorry I don't remember his name, of health that we talked to, was concerned that in compacting this, it might split open and someone might get cut. Well, I think you compact any kind. I guess what I'm saying to you guys is I'm honest, I'm trying to do the right thing, and I'm tired of getting punished for it, for the ones, the what-ifs, the what-if somebody cheats. Well, darn it, what if somebody does? Catch them, but don't punish me for it, I guess is what I'm saying. And I'm going to give you, it's a little off, but I guess I'm a little emotional this morning. When my sheep die, it used to be that I could do like any other animal person and call a rendering plant and have them moved off. I can't do that anymore, and I have not been able to do that for about 8 years. Now, while I'm technically confessing to another crime, it's illegal to bury them, I have no other way of disposing of them. So I have to hire a backhoe and dispose of them that way. When I joined the federal scrapie-free program, that was the reason they gave for not wanting the sheep carcass, was that possibly scrapie could be like the BSE in cattle, the mad cow disease, and you could infect everything there. when I joined that program, it took me 6 years to be certified scrapie-free, with a federal veterinarian coming out every year to inspect my flock, with accounting for every death with a veterinarian, and I am now certified scrapie-free. I thought, oh boy, I'm certified scrapie-free. Now I can call the rendering plant and say you don't have to worry. They don't deal with sheep. So it's just another thing where the animals that I choose to raise, I feel like I'm being regulated more than I should be. And I grant you, this is the private rendering companies, but the way I've got to do it.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fisher.
I think in this whole process, the scrapies have been transferred from the sheep to her. I think you're going to be scratching yourself to death here before you're through.
Well, I do have a solution. If you would look at the original bill, on line 22, if we could just put a period where line 20, well, let me just back up. Line 21, it says sharps, which includes needles, IV tubing with needles attached, scalpel blades, lancets, and glass tubes that could be broken during handling period. And then just eliminate everything else. And then what I would like to see is syringes without needles used on animals may be brought to the nearest solid waste management location for disposal. I could sign a document certifying that I had used these on animals, and they could maybe come up with some way to keep these in one portion of the thing so they don't have to worry that it could be something else. And then it could have my name, address, whatever you want on it, but would eliminate the concerns that were addressed to me. Thank you. And I'm not leaving.
Well, I guess, Mr. Chair, I'm a little bit confused. Nora, are you saying you don't like the amendment that was the Dash 1 amendment?
I guess I just don't know what it means, because what it tells me, the part that I've got here, just says that if they're used for purposes of animal husbandry and they've been removed from the syringe.
And the needle has
needle.
Been
the remaining portion of the syringe, including the, I'm assuming this is plunger.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose this is needle hub, but it's part of the syringe.
I believe that's the barrel.
The barrel have been destroyed, but it doesn't say how. Does that mean I can destroy it any way I want?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fisher.
I think we'd have a simple answer here. We can require that they give it 40 licks, a 2-pound hammer on a 50-pound anvil, and that is destroyed.
Mr. Chair, I guess to respond to your question, destroyed, and we'd ask, Brandon from Legislative Council could probably come down and answer this as a technical legal term, but my understanding is destroyed would mean unusable.
Oh. So, I guess that's hammer.
Yeah, I've heard some other people raise the concern about the definition of destroyed this morning.
So, obviously, I saw the DEQ people turn over in their grave when he mentioned about burning it, so that's out.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, I did in fact ask Legislative Council, I asked Brendan McCarthy that very question yesterday, knowing that would be a concern, and no, destroyed is not defined in statute, so it falls to its common meaning, and he called me up on the telephone and read me Webster's dictionary definition of destroyed, and that's what would be the common understanding.
Do you want to read that for
us? Unusable seemed like such a nice, easy term in this context.
Ah, there he is.
Mm-hmm. And he's got his dictionary in his hand. The guy with a dictionary.
I want to know where the Black's Law Dictionary is.
Why don't you just come on up and sit down and join this happy company this morning?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brendan McCarthy from Legislative Council. I use the word destroy in this situation because, thinking about other words, I didn't come up with anything that really made me very satisfied. Mangled certainly seemed to be subject to all sorts of interpretations, I think Senator Fisher's comment about giving it 40 licks with a 2-pound hammer, or maybe one lick with a 2-pound hammer, or maybe bending it just a little bit, could classify it as being mangled. Destroy, however, in the absence of a definition in statute, the court generally falls back to a common and ordinary meaning of the word, and quite often refers to the Merriam-Webster's dictionary. The first definition of destroy is to ruin the structure, organic existence, or condition of, also to ruin as if by tearing to shreds. And since shredding was brought up, I thought that that definition was particularly apt. The other definition is to put out of existence, kill, neutralize, annihilate, vanquish, none of which I thought really applied. So I thought that ruining the structure of was a pretty good thing to fall back on. And I don't think many people would be confused as what it means to be destroyed. I think some people could argue about it, but I don't think there's much. I think destroy means pretty much to ruin, to make it unlike it was before. So that's why I chose that word. I think we're going to get into this type of discussion, though, with almost any word we choose, and it's going to be difficult to find a word that's going to make everyone in this situation happy.
Brendan, on the way in here, just walking in, several people were concerned about the word destroyed. So I think maybe if you could stick around for a few minutes, I'll ask other people to testify and see what we can do here.
Okay.
With that, Marcia Keith. And
what about broken beyond use?
Well, what about broken beyond use, he said. Senator Fisher, yeah, come on back up.
We could define
Brendan.
Destroyed the statute.
Huh?
We could also define destroyed for purposes of this statute.
We could define destroyed for purposes of this statute. He says broken beyond use.
Chair Shields, Senator Fisher, the two questions. First, yes, we could define destroy for purposes of the statute. And Senator Fisher, broken beyond use, I don't know. That seems to me to be a question that this committee and the people testifying would determine. Broken beyond use, to me, is subject to not very many interpretations. And from my standpoint, my goal here is to draft a statute which is subject to hopefully only one interpretation to avoid confusion. If broken beyond use meets the policy of what this committee wants to establish, that seems offhand to be fine to me. I think that's probably subject to one good interpretation, broken beyond use. But
Marcia, would you like to add to the confusion?
I'd love to, Mr. Chair. Thank you. My name is Marcia Keith. I'm representing the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association, working with Dave Barrows and Associates. We were here when this bill had its first hearing and spoke in support of the original bill. And we are here now to address specifically the -1 amendment. The original bill, in our estimation, included veterinarians in the language that said Sharps does not include the reusable portion of syringes used with detachable disposable needles in animal husbandry. We assumed that original statement would cover the practice of veterinary medicine. The amendment is not quite so clear. It specifies farmers and ranchers, but not veterinarians. And we would like to continue to support the bill, but ask that the veterinarians be included in that list of people who would be exempt from the hazardous waste management practices. we're assuming that any farm or any ranch would be included in this definition, something on the grand scale of like a Three Mile Canyon farm that's a huge dairy farm. And some of our veterinarians have very small practices. So in terms of scope and volume, it would seem as though that the practice of veterinary medicine would be logical to include along with farmers and ranchers. They certainly do engage in the practice of animal husbandry. So that's our request. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chair, that could be done just by removing by a farmer or rancher from the amendment. We could figure out some way of handling the destroyed.
Or by adding to by a farmer or rancher or veterinarian.
Mr. Chair, I guess
you have a private person that could do the same thing that's not a rancher or a farmer.
I guess I would just point, when I asked Brendan to draft this amendment, I was taking, you know, lead from our neighboring states, and just for your information, in California, veterinarian syringes are considered medical waste, but farm and ranches are not. There is a difference specifically for farm ranches. So I did not want to take this amendment beyond what our neighboring states do, and that's why I specifically asked for farm and ranch and not veterinarian use, because I did not want to be able to use the folks who were going to oppose this bill anyway. I didn't want to be able to use that we are going beyond what our neighboring states have done.
Let's keep in mind that the four states that Senator Beyer has listed around us have all managed to solve this problem, and somehow we ought to be able to solve it.
Restrictions on veterinarian.
Hmm?
Idaho doesn't have
restrictions. No, Mr. Chair, you're right. Idaho doesn't say. I don't know if they do or not. What I have doesn't say if they do. Washington, it doesn't say. Nevada, it doesn't say, from my information, but it does specifically say California. So I didn't want to take this beyond what one of our bordering states did.
Now, Mr. Chair.
Senator Fisher.
This is, I think, just indicative of the garbage that we push off on our small business people every day. We have a bunch of ridiculous rules and regulations that just add to their expense and their time and don't accomplish one single thing. And as far as being involved with California, I could care less what California thinks about this. Wouldn't be the only thing that I disagreed with California on by any long shot. And I think that there's no reason, if it'd be done by a farmer or a rancher, it can be done by anybody that's got the right to get a hold of one of those things and use it in animal husbandry. And from that standpoint, I would feel badly if we didn't include folks that are trying to go out there and help people raise their animals as cheaply as possible and get a job done.
Any more questions or discussion? Marcia, thanks for coming up and sharing with us. I have two more people, and I'm just going to ask them to both come up. Kristen Mitchell and Katie Fast. Could you come up and share with us this morning? Kristen, you are...
Three.
That's fine. I don't care if it turns into a half dozen if it gets me out of here.
I didn't hear that. I probably didn't want to.
Go ahead, Kristen.
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Kristen Mitchell with Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association. I bring with me this morning Mary Cans, who is the executive director of the Mid-Valley Garbage and Recycling Association and also manages Marion Environmental Services, which is the provider of medical waste, infectious waste services in the Marion County area. We've looked at the amendment to the bill, and as you know, I represent the garbage and recycling collectors and the transfer stations and the landfills and the material recovery facilities and a number of composters across the state that provide those services. And in looking at the amendments of the bill, to the bill, one of the issues is what does destroyed mean? It's probably the biggest issue is what is destroyed. As long as a syringe is recognizable as a syringe, even if it's no longer working, we have the same enforcement problems that we have if it's an actual working syringe, because we still don't know where that syringe came from. So if we see a syringe coming through as a collector, if there's one on the curb, we have to tell the customer, we can't accept this, you've got medical waste in your garbage, it needs to be in a separate container. That stops it. We have to call somebody like Marion Environmental, who comes and takes care of it. If it shows up at a transfer station, it's the same story. We have to if we see it on the ground, we've got to make sure we take care of it, put it in a Sharps box at that location, and then send it through the system through an infectious waste collection system. Same is true at a landfill. They actually have people that scan stuff as it tips out of the truck. If they see it there, they have to treat it differently. And all of this is for the protection of people that work in this industry. If we don't know where it came from, it could have anything in it. There are obviously the human blood issues are the ones of greater concern to us. The reason that they have the federal bloodborne pathogens program that Oregon OSHA implements, and we have to make sure that if we have people that might even reasonably possibly come into contact with a sharp, we have to put them through the requirements of that program because of the kinds of things that you can get if you get stuck with a needle or otherwise a sharp. So if a syringe is destroyed, in some ways, if it's not destroyed to the point where it's unrecognizable and it's not sharp, you could actually cause more problems, because if you smash a plastic syringe, whereas before it may not have been sharp to the touch, you could then have shards that actually would be sharp to the touch. So I think the first issue is whether destroyed means it's unrecognizable as a syringe, and then also whether you can really truly certify that whatever is on that thing is benign to somebody that might touch it anyway. So those are a couple of the issues. I also would think that the amendment says that the needle comes off and then the needle would still go in the sharps box. Is that the intention? Okay, I think it probably needs to be clarified to that particular point. So those are a couple of our issues. I know that Mrs. Shalisky wants to solve the problem and wants to follow the rules, and we certainly appreciate that, but I don't think this syringe or this amendment helps us on our end of the business.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fisher.
You do handle broken glass, don't you?
Mr. Chair, Senator Fisher, of course.
I can't imagine much of anything more that you could find in a syringe than you find in broken or in pop bottles and pop cans that are returned. And certainly a few broken plastic syringes are not any different than broken plastic bottles or any other type of broken plastic that would come through your waste system. To me, this is a rather ridiculous.
Mr. Chair.
Going the second mile of ridiculousness.
Senator Corker.
Senator Fisher, you obviously have no concern for people that work in the healthcare environment. My wife's a women's healthcare nurse practitioner. I've been around the issue of sharps and appropriate disposal because of bloodborne pathogens and because of all the other issues associated with this as a safety issue for healthcare workers. If you see that as bothersome, that's unfortunate. The fact of the matter is, you know, it's a lot more bothersome to bear the expense of having to treat someone with hepatitis C or someone with HIV as a result of this. So I don't think the caution is inappropriate at all. You know, you can blather on about anti-government stuff all you want, but anti-regulatory stuff. But I think this, in fact, is a safety issue.
We're talking about veterinarians' issues here, not the...
Well, so you don't think dogs and horses have blood? I mean, they don't have diseases?
Gentlemen, the issue here is when you get to that waste recycling or that waste disposal point, they can't tell the difference between the syringe that could be the highly dangerous one that Senator Corcoran is worried about, or the one that was used by the rancher at Senator Fisher's time. They have to treat them both the same under the law. And we're trying to get through this conundrum.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Beyer.
If we were to change the presumption in the law to say that if you find a destroyed syringe in your waste stream that is assumed to be exempt, would that alleviate your concerns?
Mr. Chair and Senator Beyer, my name is Mary Cans, and I am the Executive Director of Mid Valley Garbage and Recycling Association. I also manage Marin Environmental Services, the special medical waste collection firm here in Marion County. And I was also on the task force that originally put this bill on the records way back in the mid-80s. So I have a lot of years behind me and the industry I represent and our concerns. To answer your question, there is no way for us to determine where that particular item is coming from. It will literally shut down a system. I'll give you a for instance. We have a MRF, which is a materials recycling facility in Brooks. It has an automated belt that runs through it. We run commercial waste over that belt. If someone... anyone that is privy to the bill as it's written or suggested amended damages or crushes or breaks the syringe, and they're authorized to do so, and that syringe ends up in waste going across those belts throughout this state, it will shut down the system. We have no way to know where that syringe is coming from. I guess our fear is these are the same concerns and the same comments that went around and around back in the mid-80s. And what I believe, the bill as it's written right now, I believe that is the safest form of handling this material that's ever been developed, in particular for our industry and the public at large.
Senator Bob.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't state my question in the way you understood. I asked if we change the law to say that any destroyed syringe found in your waste stream was exempt from your shutting down your belt, would that eliminate your concerns?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, if I can, I think it's once again would depend on what destroyed means. You know, when we pick stuff up, it gets compacted, pretty seriously compacted in order to make room in the load. And so you could have a syringe that maybe was disposed of inappropriately that shows up and is, in one sense, destroyed, but may not be one that came from an animal husbandry practice. So I think, once again, it would depend on that definition. And as long as it's not recognizable when it gets there, then we don't have the same enforcement issues, because we wouldn't have Oregon OSHA coming out and saying, you know, you're not protecting your workers here if you've got these syringes showing up and you can't tell us where they came from. And the DEQ would be in the same position. They would come out, and if we had a syringe, we're not allowed to accept them. We could be subject to regulation. So if you can't recognize it, then I think that takes care of a big chunk of our concern about enforcement.
Mr. Chair, we're assuming that illegal drug users, someone is assuming illegal drug users are going to be out there throwing their syringes away, which they probably do today.
Right.
Okay. Versus a farmer or a rancher who's going to take a syringe, and I'm not talking about defining destroyed to the point where it's unrecognizable as a syringe, but my definition would be rendered unusable or something on that line. My point is that you've got two different situations. I mean, so if you change the law so it says that if you find a unusable or a destroyed syringe in your waste stream, it is assumed for purposes of OSHA, DEQ, whoever else you have to comply with, that is not considered a medical waste or, you know, falls under the exemption. But if you find a syringe with a barrel in it and probably a needle on it, I can't imagine illegal drug users are kind enough to remove the needle before they throw it away. This would still have to have the needle removed and disposed of in a sharps container. I mean, I don't...
You do make some sense there in that if it's probably... I mean, you'd have to have a mighty responsible drug abuser to think about removing that needle and disposing of it properly to make it look like the farmer's syringe. So I'm just trying to think this through. I'm trying to help the farmers and the ranchers here, as well as make sure that we're medically safe for everybody. And I was thinking before Senator Beyer said this that the problem still is that somebody could end up with some kind of human infection from a syringe that looked like a farmer's syringe but wasn't. Maybe the key is to it that it cannot have that needle, because that's the point. No pun intended.
Try to leave that to you.
But you understand what I'm saying, though. If would that satisfy your concern? I mean, he's suggesting, Senator Beyer is suggesting that there's an exemption if it just comes through and it's unusable and it has no needle attached.
Mr. Chair and Senator Beyer, how do we know the difference if it came from an animal husbandry operation or from any other operation if we saw it there, even if it were, you know, a doctor's office or any other location? I mean, the issue about a needle being intact, it's very possible that the needle gets smashed on occasion when they come through, even if they've been, you know, if there is an illicit drug user that puts it in the system. We just don't know the difference. If it's a syringe, we treat it as a syringe. We take every precaution that we can to protect the people that work in our industry. And I don't see any way of dealing with that other than destroying that syringe to the point that you can't tell that's what that is. It's just,
Mr. Chair,
the only practical fix.
I'd like someone, and I don't know if the refuse people are the people. Maybe it's DEQ. Maybe it's OSHA. Maybe it's Health Division. I'd like to know from our four neighboring states, all which have an exemption that allows this, if they could demonstrate to us problems that have been generated by the fact that farmers and ranchers are exempt from in this manner. As this act law actually goes beyond, if we were to adopt this amendment, this actually goes beyond the exemptions in those four states, because they don't speak of destroying the syringe first or removing the needle. It's a blanket exemption, to my understanding, for farm and ranch. So I guess I'd like to see some proof that this is a problem in our four neighboring states.
Is there anybody in the audience that wants to try and take that on? Bob, come on up here and share with us.
Here, I'll just sit back for a second.
Okay.
And coming here for a short time.
I don't know if Dr. DeBess has any comments that he'd like to answer at the same time, because we are raising concerns about transmission of animal diseases to human beings. You know, that's the basis of this, and so Dr. DeBess would be in a position to at least address that part of it. So, do you want to restate your question after all of this?
No, we know the question.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Bob Danko with the Department of Environmental Quality. I'm not sure I can address the particular question, but I do want to just go on the record about the information that you're using, Senator Beyer, because I'm the person who is responsible for providing that information to Judith. I thought I was doing a public service, trying to help out. But if you read the first paragraph of that, I qualified it in a big way. What we did was we sent an email out to our infectious waste contacts in other states, and we got responses back. And we have not gone back to verify that information is exact in each case. So, for instance, Ms. Mitchell just gave me some information that puts a little different light on what's happening in Washington, and we have since heard puts a little different light on what's happening in California. So I just want to, on the record, say that I was trying to provide kind of an overall picture, and it would take more research to determine exactly, especially how Washington and California are handling it. The majority of states that we got back from, you know, regulate all the syringes and all the sharps as infectious waste, even if they're from farms and ranches. But you're correct in Nevada and Idaho. I'm pretty confident of that information. I'm not that confident in the information from California and Washington, and I qualified that when I gave it to Judith. I just want that on the record.
Okay.
We could, you know, it would take some work, but we could, you know, go back to Washington and California and try to get to the bottom of it. Just that You know, it's the bureaucracies that are there are probably similar like we have here. It's difficult to get a good straight answer.
I would assume
a good straight answer.
I would assume that if they called you, you'd give them a straight answer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, I would for the area that I'm responsible for. For instance, I believe in the state of Washington, at least from the new information I see, from the infectious waste side, it may be exempt, but from the solid waste management landfill side, it may not be exempt. So that's where you get into trouble. That's why I'm glad both OSHA's here today and the health division's here today, because we're into areas that, you know, some of us just don't know the details on. And so I'm glad those two state agencies are represented today.
I have this idea in my head. You have this syringe that a rancher has destroyed. The needle has been detached. It shows up in the waste stream. Dr. DeBess, can you talk about the concerns of transmission of animal diseases to human beings as this syringe is now visible, and you've got a worker at a refuse plant coming in contact with that syringe?
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Dr. DeBess. I'm the state public health veterinarian, and I deal with zoonotic illnesses, which are illnesses that are transmitted from animals to humans. Interestingly enough, the case that the person that was here talked about, sheep and scrapie, is a very interesting example of a zoonotic disease, a disease that can be transmitted from animals to humans. Scrapie is passed on from animal to animal and then to humans by a very small particle called a prion. And prions are basically found, if you were to collect body fluids from a sheep, for example, they can be found found in a syringe. So when you actually destroy the syringe to the point in which there's a sharp or there's any handling of that syringe and somebody actually gets stuck with it, the possibility of the probability of that disease being passed on to humans is high. It's present, I should say. So there's a number of illnesses out there, and dealing with zoonotic diseases are nothing new. They've been around for a long time. They go back to influenza, for example, that came from birds in the 1900s. And the connection between animals and humans and living in close proximity. By collecting blood samples or fluid samples from an animal and keeping them in a syringe and that not being properly destroyed, that could potentially allow for a person to be infected with a disease. Much like it is with hepatitis A, B, C, HIV, we deal with other illnesses as well that could actually pose a threat to human health. We all know that animals and humans share a number of illnesses. It all starts from salmonella, such as simple bacterial disease, to prion or disease or mad cow disease, to parasites. So this is not this is something that we're certainly concerned about.
Any other questions? A minute ago, Katie, you were up here. I'll give you a chance to come back up and finish your testimony, or begin your testimony.
Thank you, Senator Shields. For the record, Katie Fass with the Oregon Cattlemen's. I'm not in opposition of the amendment. However, I am concerned that it doesn't allow for the reuse of syringes, which is something the original bill allowed for. It's common practice for farmers and ranchers to disinfect their own syringes and reuse them. That's a common practice and highly acceptable in the animal sciences field. So we would be happy to help work on an amendment to, again, allow for that. And possibly, I believe there's a solution that maybe these syringes never get in our trash and recycling system. If we were to allow farmers, ranchers, even veterinarians to hand deliver syringes in some sort of plastic bag or container and deliver those to the recycling center, they would never be put in the trash system. We wouldn't have to worry about them getting broken and possibly pricking someone and having that person be unaware if that was a human syringe or an animal syringe. And I'd be happy to work with the recyclers and others on an amendment if you're interested.
Thank you. I don't know how to structure this, but it's become obvious, especially as Dr. DeBest just talked about, there's some real dangers here. And so it's my feeling, I don't want to waste the time of the whole committee debating and going in circles. It seems like we're chasing our tail on this. I would like to suggest that all the interested parties get together, try to figure out a solution that you can all buy off on and come back. And if you can't come back with a solution that everybody buys off on, I can't see moving this forward. It sounds too dangerous to do that. Senator Byard, would you give me a reaction to that?
Mr. Chair, we had a work group once, and I don't know that there is a solution that everyone's going to buy off on. So I guess it's probably going to be a dead show.
I second that.
I'm not happy about it because I think that the garbage folks are throwing up a bunch of red herrings that, and quite frankly, if the Marion County Waste Disposal had been treating Ms. Schlitzky properly in the first place, that this bill never would have come forward because she wouldn't have been being gouged to get rid of her syringes.
That raises an interesting point. She paid an excessive amount of money for a long period of time, and I understand that she's now being treated differently. There's a different category, and she's not paying as much money. Has anybody thought of refunding all the money she's wasted over the years?
Well,
but
Mr. Chair, it's unfortunate we are penalizing a person who is, as she, you know, she said she's
trying to
do it right,
follow the law.
And I would probably, the reason most, or we haven't heard about this before, is that there's probably a good percentage of ranchers and farmers across the state who are not doing it right. And so that's why it has been brought forward in the past.
Yeah, right. Well, Senator Beyer, I understand your frustration because you put a lot of work into this. And at this moment, you are frustrated, and I understand that. But I still would offer that if there's anybody here that's willing to get all the parties together and try to get a compromise, if that compromise is arrived at that everybody's willing to sign off on, then I would be glad to schedule another work session.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also would like to get information from someone, either DEQ or Health Division or OSHA or someone who could tell me the problems that these exemptions in our neighboring states have created in their waste stream. I would like to see that information, that proof that there is a problem by exempting these materials from farms and ranches.
Do you want to pick a victim out there today and ask them to
come back? Victims at least.
Mr. Chair.
Hey, can you folks try to get back to Senator Beyer with some answers on that question, please?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fisher.
Well, good doctors here. You expand a little bit on your
zoonotic?
Yeah, diseases here. How long do they last in air temperature and things like that?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Senator Fisher, there's a number of zoonotic diseases that we know about. In fact, I have three long lists of illnesses that can be transmitted from animals to humans. This is something that has been put out by the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, and some that we work with on a regular basis. In terms of how long do they last, a lot of it depends on the particular illness and that you may be exposed to. For example, if one were to be exposed to mad cow disease or a prion, that the only the end is death. So
no, I'm asking how long do these things last in the atmosphere? In other words, days is supposed to not
right.
last over what, an hour or
yeah,
30 minutes or something like that at room temperature.
Right. A lot of it depends on the organism, and a lot of it depends on the environment around the organism. For example, we know that Salmonella, which is a common bacteria, can live in surfaces for up to a week. And that has been proven by collecting swabs on a regular basis and finding the live organism. E. coli happens to be the same thing, which is primarily in cattle and can be passed on to humans in the same way. So a lot of the organisms, viruses, depending on the virus, HIV does not live long outside. Some other viruses tend to live a long time, such as influenza, for example. Those are viruses that are pretty hardy. They actually survive in the environment quite well without any problems. Parasites, another category, are also organisms that tend to survive in the outside for up to 18 months. So the length of survival of these organisms it's variable, but can be from zero to a lifetime.
Dr. DeBess, I appreciate the information you've shared this morning. It's enlightening. If Senator Fisher has further questions, I'm going to ask you to continue the discussion after the hearing is over.
Certainly.
And with that, I'm going to adjourn the Senate Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources for the morning. And on Friday, what time do we meet?
10 o'clock.
10 o'clock, and hearing room B, and that's the big hearing on
energy issues.
On energy issues.
Bonneville.
Steve Wright will be gone 45 minutes after the beginning of the hearing, and so if you want to hear the big guy, you need to be there at 10 o'clock.
In the meantime, don't get hoof and mouth disease.
Committee is adjourned.